Did anyone have any questions about foot washing and the worksheet on foot washing? Does anyone think that we should do foot washing once a month at church as an ordinance? What was Jesus saying when he said that we should do this? He washed his disciples' feet, and then he said, we should do this. What was he saying? Thomas. That was a practice that people did because of a reason. They wore sandals all the time. And when you went into someone's house, you'd take your sandals off and they would wash your feet because your feet would be dirty. This would be similar to going washing the dishes at a meal, cleaning up the table. It would be like going to, let's say, the Julian's house, and after the meal, as the guest, it would be like Jesus saying, let me help you with this, and begin to clean the table and take the dishes, and instead of just waiting on your host to do all that for you and sitting back. And what Jesus was saying was, whenever you're in a spot with other people, always take the serving position. Be a servant. It doesn't necessarily mean wash feet. Although in a book I was reading recently, a leader of a large church said that every now and then he gets all of his ministry volunteers together and they wash each other's feet. And he said they don't do that because Jesus tells them to wash feet. They do it just to illustrate what Jesus was saying. And he said it always is a pretty moving experience when you actually do that. But there are so many ways we can serve each other. We need to make sure we don't expect to be served, but we serve. But you get to that by looking at it, understanding the culture, why it was important, and taking a look at all that. Otherwise, you could just look at it and say, yep, that's cultural, I don't have to worry about it. But you should think about it and make sure you understand what he was saying. Okay, well, we're going to talk about something today that is very interesting. It is something that could be a class all by itself, and we don't have time for that. But we're going to talk about words themselves. What is in a word? Words, language, linguistics, these are the building blocks of ideas and communication. Words are their vehicles, their little packages, their little capsules of things that we give to someone else so that that someone else has the same thought that I have. If I want someone to think a certain way, I have to put that thought into words, and the words are going to travel. How many of you remember the old, I think there's a new one too, but the old Charlie and the Chocolate Factory, Willy Wonka and the Chocolate Factory story or movie, however you got that information. Do you remember one of the scenes in that story where one of the children gets put into this machine or something and he turns into little particles and floats across the room? Remember this? And they're all concerned if he's going to come out on the other end. That kind of illustrates what words do. It takes a thought, a real thought that you have, transports that thought through thin air into someone else's mind. I do this every Sunday when I preach. I'm trying to get ideas into your head that God wants you to have, and I'm trying to connect to children and different age groups and genders and vocations and levels of understanding, and that's what you do with words. Sometimes we read the Bible, which is definitely made up of words. Would anyone argue with that? This is God trying to take thoughts from his heart and put them into your heart, and he does it the best way possible, words. But here's the problem. You need to know what the words mean. And sometimes we don't know what the words mean in the very basic sense, and because we don't know what they mean, we don't have the right thoughts. And that is very important. Culture aside, just the words themselves have meaning. What is a foot? We talked about foot washing. But what is a foot? What is washing? Do you know what that means? Before we even get into the cultural dimension, does this apply to today? Do we even know what the words themselves mean? That also is very important. There are three aspects to a word. There's probably a different way to break this up, but the way I'm looking at it today to help us is three aspects to any word that you read. The first is the thing we're going to talk about, and that is definition or meaning. Definition or meaning. The definition of a word, this is the central purpose of any word. And that's going to be the focus of our lesson today. Understanding the definition or meaning of the words that you're reading in the Bible. And just with a few simple illustrations today, I think I'm going to demonstrate that you don't know as much as you thought you knew. I'm going to get you interested in studying these words a little bit more. There's also the matter of form. We're not going to talk about form or the next one, function, very much today, because that would take us off into language arts studies. We would have to get back into our grammar studies and get back into our language class. And that, we don't have time for that. We do not have time to talk about form and function, but I will introduce the idea to us so you know we don't miss it. This is the way that words are inflected. Form. It's the way that words are inflected. Anyone know the word inflection? Inflection. No, you don't. Mara knows. Okay. It's just a fancy word. That means the way that the parts of a word are put together. A word is made up of parts. It's just like a Lego kit. It's just like a circuit panel. It's like a car. So I'm trying to think through all the jobs that you guys have out here. It's like anything that you do. Medical people, it's like a body, has lots of parts. And what inflection is the way those parts are put together. Inflection, word form, deals with the parts of a word. And a word has parts like roots, the central part of the word, that middle part, the main part of the word where the meaning really is. Prefixes, those are letters and little parts of a word that can be tacked onto the beginning of a word. It's like adding a module on or adding a little extra piece on. In the automobile world, if the car is the word, the root, the front bumper is the prefix and the rear bumper is the suffix, right? These prefixes are things like even pre, the word itself, prefix. Pre would be the front part, fix would be the main part, and they add meaning to the main part of the word. And you need to be aware of some of that. Roots, the prefixes on the front, suffixes on the end. You also have things like gender. We don't think about that as much in English. Those who speak Spanish or are bilingual, or quite frankly use most other languages, do think about gender. How many genders are there usually? Three. Masculine, feminine, and neuter. And that is not always talking about actual gender. In Greek as well as in Spanish, you could have a table. And what is table? What's the gender of table in Spanish? Feminine or is it neuter? In Greek, you actually have things like sin. Sin is a feminine word in Greek. But the word sinner is masculine. There is no theological significance to that fact. What that tells you is the form of the word. It tells you what endings to put on the word. It doesn't tell you more things about the word. There's nothing there that means it came from woman. But men are the ones that do it. No, that's not, there's nothing like that there. It's just which endings you're going to put on, which inflection chart you're going to get that word from. Number, is this word singular or plural? Sometimes that is important to know because in English translations, usually the word you, Y-O-U, could be singular or it could be plural. And how do you know? If you're down south, it's easy to know because you just put a Z on the end if it's plural. It's either you singular or yous plural. But The rest of the world, it's the same. It's you singular or you plural. You have to look at context. Sometimes in the Bible, you think he's talking to a group and he's only talking to one person, but you wouldn't know unless you can look at Greek, or you wouldn't know. So some of that is also out there. We're not going to focus on that. But the form of a word, also the function of a word, is important. The function of the word. The function of a word is talking about how that word is used in the sentence. This is talking about parts of speech, parts of a sentence. If form is talking about, or inflection is talking about how a word is put together, what function or syntax, is the other word concerns, is how words are put together in a sentence. It's the bigger kit. With Legos, you can do this, right? You can buy little minifigures and you could take the head off and the arms off and the hands out and the legs off. You can do all of that and you can put the guy back together and you have a little Lego guy. That's the word. But then the sentence, okay, you buy another kit and you have a car. You put the guy in the car and you put the car on a road and you build a garage for that. That's the sentence. Does that make sense? And so syntax or function is how the words are put into a sentence. And that's when we start talking about things like nouns and verbs. What words are telling you? Action. What kind of action? Is it describing something? Is it a command that I'm supposed to obey? Is it a question? Is it something that's possible or not possible? Things like this are asked. Nouns, pronouns, adjectives, prepositions, adverbs, conjunctions, interjections, verbs, and we're not going to talk about all that today. But words are interesting things, and I bring all this up just to say there's a lot more to a word than just its meaning. A lot of parts of a word and how words are put together that help get the thought from the mind of God into your mind so that you understand exactly what he's thinking. But today, we're going to pay attention to the meaning of words. It's important because if you look at the Bible and you think a word means one thing, and you read the Bible that way, are you actually letting the Bible tell you what it's saying? Or are you telling the Bible what to say? If you bring an idea to a word and you read that word thinking it means the wrong thing, is God talking to you or are you telling God what you think he's saying? Which is it? Well, you're reading something into the Bible that's not there. You need to know what that word actually means to know what the Bible is saying. That's important. If you know anything about the Reformation period of time, Martin Luther and some of these people, the Reformation re-emphasized to the Christian church the way that the early church understood the Bible. And that is a fancy word called sola scriptura, just the Bible. Right prior to the Reformation, what had become very popular in many churches or so-called churches was for the entire congregation to listen to a priest or some so-called preacher make up stuff. Look at a story in the Old Testament, David and Goliath. And, well, David represents little people, and Goliath represents big challenges in our life. And then there are these five stones, and there are five thoughts that I want to have you know today. Faith and hope and love and justice and mercy. And you're thinking, but how did you come up with those five? Trust me, I'm the pastor, and that's what I see in these five stones today because I really prayed hard. And then he let one of those stones go. Which stone did he use to kill Goliath? I think it was faith. I don't think it was mercy. I don't think it was... Do you see what I'm saying? You could go to the Bible and come up with all kinds of outlandish ideas, and that's what people were doing. And the Reformation, one of the things it brought back to the table was an emphasis on, no, the Bible has words, and the Bible says what those words mean. That's what you're going with. What do those words actually mean? Anyone can look at that. Anyone can study that. And that's what we're supposed to be following. What does a word mean? Pay attention to that when you're reading the Bible. Here's why. Number one, as you pay attention to word meaning, sometimes you will recognize that you don't know what a word means. Have you ever had that happen where you're reading the Bible and you come to a word and you say, I don't know what that means? What do you do? Do you just skip over it? Well, if you would get $1 million for knowing what it means, you would probably not skip over it. But when you skip over a word that you don't know what it means, you're skipping over something God wanted to tell you. Think about that. You should want to know what that word means. Here are some words you might find, especially in your King James Bible. There are a lot of words like this in the King James Bible. I'm only giving you three of them. You can get laundry lists of words like this. What does this word mean? Feign. He feigned not. Or he feign would go with them. In Spanish, you don't have the word feign. You have other words. But in our English King James Bibles, if you're reading one of those, what does the word feign mean? Do you know? You ready for this? It means gladly. You say, yeah, I never use that word. Yes, and you probably don't pay attention to it when you see it. You probably just read right over it and miss exactly what was happening right there. Feign. What does scrip mean? Jesus told the disciples, don't take a scrip. And then the next time he talked to them, he said, go take a scrip. Well, what is a scrip? Do you have a scrip, Josh? Anyone know what the scrip is? Give me some good guesses just for fun. It means a bag. It means a bag that was cut probably out of leather, or a bag designed to carry things that were cut, like meat of some kind of a bag. You would only know that if you studied it or you heard a pastor say it sometime, and then you're taking his word for it. But if you didn't study that and know that, you'd think, take script. Is that the scriptures? It's like a hip way of talking about the Bible. Take the script. I don't know. We read words in our Bible sometimes, and we're just very happy to not know what they mean. We just go right over them. It means a bag. What about trow? Trow. Some words look funny just out of nowhere, and today that one's looking really funny to me. Trow. What does that mean? Where you'll see it in the Bible sometimes is where one person will say to another, I trow not. I trow not. Does it mean to try to row really hard? Like you take trying and rowing, you put it to get to row? T-row, is it like a brother of Tyrannosaurus Rex or trow? Isn't that something you use when you make mortar for bricks, a trowel? No. Trow. What is? Anyone know what trow means? It means to believe or to trust or kind of think, to agree to think. I trow not. Like, I don't believe that. Or I don't think so. That's the idea. But we don't talk that way. And we're probably, unfortunately, very glad to just read that and pretend like we know what it's saying. Because we understand the next thing and that's all that really matters. But you should know all the words. Husbands, if you don't know something your wife is saying to you, is it okay to not know? Is it okay to say, you know, a week later, well, I didn't really know what you meant when you said that. I don't know that word. Whose fault is that? It's your fault. You should figure out what that word means. Okay, so there are a lot of words like this. Other times, though, we fail to realize that we don't know what a word means. There are actually words in our Bibles, often in the King James, but sometimes in other ones, and it's a word that we use today, but it means something different when we use it than when it was used many years ago. Words change over time. Sometimes they go away. Sometimes the spelling changes. Sometimes the meaning changes a little bit. Sometimes the meaning changes a lot. Sometimes meaning changes 100% opposite. And if you're reading the Bible and you think that God said this, but you misunderstood the word, even though you thought you knew it, you got the wrong message and God didn't say that. So you really want to know sometimes when you actually don't think you don't know what you think you know. I'll give you some examples. There's a lot of these too. Convenient. What does the word convenient mean in the King James Bible? What does it mean today? Accessible, available, easy to do, convenient. When the Bible says that you should put away from you foolish jesting and coarse talk, which is not convenient, what is it saying? It's not easy to do that? No, it is easy to do that. Not convenient. The word convenient does not mean easy to do in the Bible. It actually, back 400 years ago, meant it is not appropriate. It's not proper. It's not acceptable. That's not what that word means today. What about the word conversation? This one gets beaten up a good deal. We probably know that in the King James Bible, conversation is not talking about talking. What is it talking about in the New Testament, in the King James Bible? What does conversation mean? Your whole lifestyle, the things you do, your habits, your attitude, and your words. So this is a case in which a word, we haven't lost it in 400 years in English. It's went from a general word down to a very specific word. And that's how it's changed. We've used it so many ways and so many times that we pretty much only use it today to talk about the things we say. But a long time ago, when the Bible was written and translated into English, that was the word that meant your whole lifestyle. But if you don't know that, you're not looking at that verse and bringing your lifestyle into obedience to the Lord. You're not thinking that way. And you're missing it. Curious. I think there's a place where the Bible says that people got saved and then they took their books and all their curious arts and burned them in the fire. That's curious. It should make you curious. But what does curious arts mean in the Bible? It does not mean interesting. It does not mean something that you want to take a look at. What does the word curious mean in the King James Bible? You ready for this? This is so fun. It means knitted. Handcrafted, like a craft, like knitting. In South Africa, little things that people make and sell on the side of the road today, over in South Africa where my parents live and serve the Lord, they sell things, they call those curios. You buy curios. Curios are little mementos from other places in the world that people made with their hands. That's closer to what this word means, actually, than how we use it in America. Curious means knitted, hand-woven, hand-crafted. Totally different. Now are you curious to look at more words? Leasing. What does leasing mean in the Bible? The Bible says no leasing. You say, well, that car I have out there probably has me sinning then. I'm not a high fan of leasing. I could talk you out of it pretty good, but not because the Bible says it's a sin. What does leasing mean in the King James Bible? It means lying. That's what it means. It means telling a lie. You would totally miss that, and you might actually go and cancel a lease when that might not be a good thing to do because you don't understand the word. Very important. God didn't tell you to do that if the Bible didn't actually say that. What about listed? There's a verse that says that a ship, I think in James talks about it, a ship goes and it turns a rudder, and the ship goes when that rudder's turned wherever the governor listeth. So, what does a governor have to do with a ship? Well, governor is referring to a ship captain. That's what they would call a governor. Okay, well, the governor, the captain turns the ship wherever he listeth, wherever he lists. How do you list a ship? List means choose. If you list where you want to go to college, what you're saying is, I'm choosing where I'm going to go, wherever I list. I will go wherever I list. Well, that is old English. Today, a list is a bulleted list. And back then, they say, bulleted, who shot it? Means something totally different. And it's very violent back then. Today, bullets on a list, you do that with a word processor. Everyone does that. Prevent. What does the word prevent mean? Today, what does it mean? You do know what it means today. We're not that bad. To stop something from happening. Insurance, right? Stopping something from mitigating risk, stopping something. If Jesus prevents somebody in the New Testament, in the King James Bible, to prevent means to get there first. That's what it means. It means to get there first. It also could mean to anticipate, to come before something. Like, you have to sit and think about that one because you just don't get that out of this word at all. I'm like, okay, I got to think about that one a little bit more. So sometimes a word clearly does not mean what you think it means. Sometimes you know that. It's clear. You've never seen this word in your life. Sometimes you don't know that because you see the word every day. It's just used in a different way. People are saying, man, where's my Bible dictionary? That's a good question. You should probably have one. We're going to talk about that. But this is very important. There are long lists of words like this. Sometimes, too, a word can mean a variety of things. A word can mean a variety of things. A lot of Bible interpretation mistakes are made because we take a word in one place and we say it means the same thing every other single place. Now, I have used already the excellent example in a previous class of the word R-U-N. What does R-U-N mean? Well, what does it say? What's the word? Run. What does it mean? Give me a definition of run. Lewis? To generate a process? You are always so philosophical. That's not a bad thing. Any other definitions? Mara?
Yeah, to put one leg in front of the other quickly.
What if my nose runs? But my nose runs too and has no legs whatsoever. And when my nose runs, it actually doesn't move at all. It's what's inside my nose that runs, and it doesn't have legs either. We'll stop there. Politicians run for office. Cars run when they're sitting still. Businesses run. People run businesses that run. Noses run. I already talked about that. Athletes run. What's that? You run reports. You run a fever. I mean, the list could keep going. Now imagine that you write something about his nose ran. 400 years later, someone speaking the same language, but 400 years later, that word run, they're not quite sure how you used it back then, but they still use it today. His nose ran. Folks, strange things happen in the Bible. And back in those days, noses used to run. I don't know how to explain that, but they used to run because that's what this word means. Well, yeah, it does sometimes, and sometimes it means something else. And it shouldn't scare you to think that sometimes words in the Bible can mean different things in different places. And you have to know about that. Words like elements. What do elements mean? In 2 Peter 3:10, the word elements is used to refer to basic components of the universe. The elements of the universe are going to burn with a fire someday when God destroys everything. But then in Hebrews 5:12, the writer of Hebrews says that because we are not good at teaching other people the Bible, the pastor has to go back and teach everyone the basic elements. He needs to teach people about earth science? Is that? No. Here he's talking about the basic elements of the Christian faith. The other place is talking about the elements of the universe and the physical universe. Then, in other places, it can mean even other things. And we know that because if you read the context, there is a big difference between basic principles of the Christian life and the stars and the moon and the sun in the solar system. We know that. But sometimes we need to be paying attention and make sure that we don't just take one thing and press it on another. That is going to be your homework this week. I'm going to send you home with a worksheet that gives you 11 verses, and all of the verses use the word save or salvation. There are people that say that if you're sick, you need salvation, because the Bible says that. And they would say, well, sickness means that you're a sinner and you're going to hell. If you knew God, you wouldn't be sick. That's not what it's talking about. It's talking about physical deliverance. There are places where someone is drowning in the ocean and they're going to sink and they say, save me! They're not asking for Jesus to take away their sins. They're asking for Jesus to pull them out of the water because they're drowning. There is a place in the Bible that says baptism saves us. Well, what does that mean? See, now it's important to know that salvation does not always mean exactly the same thing. Sometimes it is a big deal to know there is a variety of meanings in different settings. Very important. I'm not going to talk about this one a lot. You're going to do that this week. The word world. Some people say, what does the word world mean? Can anyone tell me what the word world means? In Greek, it's the word cosmos. What does world mean? It can mean a variety of things. It can mean the whole created universe, including the earth, the heavens, the heavenly bodies, and so forth. It can mean the earth as opposed to heaven. Sometimes it means all of that. Sometimes it means just the world and not the stars. Sometimes it's talking about all the people in the world. Sometimes it's talking about the condition of mortal life, life in this world. Sometimes it's talking about beings, human and supernatural, who are in rebellion against God. Sometimes it's talking about the system of earthly and social structures, like the cares of this world. Sometimes it's talking about adornment and how you dress. That's a lot of different possibilities. It's called language. And studying the Bible sometimes means you need to understand things in a responsible way. We talk this way all the time. The word cool used to be cool when I was a kid. What does cool mean? Oh, that's cool. That's cool. That's cool. What does that mean? Totally affected by context. If my mom walked up to my dad and said, oh, you're cool, that doesn't mean that your temperature's low, right? We know that, and we don't have to study a subject and take a test to figure out all the different possible meanings. But when you're looking back into the Bible at words that were written way back then, you need to make sure you do have a proper understanding of those words. So world is another one of those things. There are other opportunities. What does it mean, for instance, when it says God so loved the world? What is it talking about? The people in the world. Did he die for the forests and the trees? No, because they can't believe. God so loved the world that he gave his only son that whoever believes. Okay, it just told us the kind of way that the world is being used. People who can believe, that's the people he died for. It's people. Then it says in 1 John 2, don't you love the world or anything in the world? Well, you just said that God loved the world. Now you're telling me not to love the world. What does that mean? Well, it says, for all that is in the world, the lust of the flesh, the lust of the eyes, and the pride of life. Okay, now he's describing, we're talking about the way that things are in this world, the kind of life this world pushes on you. It's a different way of looking at it. What about 1 Peter 3:3? Your beauty should not come from the outward world, such as braided hair and wearing of gold jewelry and fine clothes. That word world is talking about your outward presentation. Your outward adornment is the word that I think we have in our Bibles. But it's the word cosmos. It's the same word. I have a world on me all the time. It's not talking about the world of microbes on my skin. It's talking about how I present myself in an orderly fashion. And I could go on and on. There are many opportunities to look at this. As we look at words, we do need to make sure that we don't rely on etymology alone. Etymology is a word that means the history of a word. Just because a word came from somewhere doesn't mean that is what it means today. And I'll explain what I'm talking about here. The word holy is an English word. We use it to describe a Greek word, but the English word that we use, holy, comes from an old English word that means whole and healthy, very healthy. The healthy idea way back in history gave us the word holy, but we're using that word to describe a Greek word. Here's the point. It's the Greek word that tells us what it means. Not the old English word. The Greek word means set apart and sanctified for a purpose. The best word we could come up with to say that in English was holy, but not be. Some preachers will say, so being holy means to be spiritually healthy. No, it doesn't. Because the Greek word that God gave us is not talking about being healthy. We have to make sure we don't lean on English history to figure out. We have to understand what does the Bible word itself mean. Sometimes in our language, we don't have really great ways to say things in other languages. We understand that in a church like this more than many places because we understand there's a lot of languages and we wrestle with how to say things to one another sometimes across those languages. Here's a pet peeve of mine. Power. Power. The Greek word for power is dunamis. That's how you say it, dunamis. That's the old Greek word. Many years later, a couple hundred years later, some scientists invented something called what? Dynamite. It's this chemical powder that you put together, and if you light it, it blows up. Well, when scientists make things and discover things, they have to give them names. Scientists are not linguists, but they like to sound smart. And so they'll look for words related to what they discovered to come up with a word. And sometimes they'll use Latin words or Greek words, and they found the word dunamis, which means power. And dynamite is powerful in a certain way. And so they used that Greek word to create our English word dynamite. And so today, some preachers will say, the gospel is the dynamite of God. It just explodes the world of Satan to smithereens. No, it doesn't. That's not what that word means. The Greek word dunamis has nothing to do with destructive, smithereen-type power. What the Greek word actually means is inner life-giving force. It's an inner life of God that empowers you to accomplish the will of God. It has nothing to do with exploding things. When you give people the gospel, you're not trying to blow their ideas to smithereens. It's a nice idea, but that's not what that is talking about in the Bible. It's talking about life from God that flows through you into another person's life that overcomes the challenges that are there. So we really have to be careful how we use words. Avoid relying on word parts. The word regard, we understand this, right? What does the word regard mean today? To give attention to something, to treat it in a certain way, with respect or whatever. But if you were going to look at this word and break it into parts, you would say regard. So I have to guard something, but I have to guard it again. And if you drilled into the history of this word, you would find that this word comes from guard, and this comes from re, which means to do it again. But that doesn't mean that's what it means today. It actually doesn't even mean that at all. Don't ask me why English is strange that way. But you can't rely alone on word parts. This is a word in your King James Bible, the reward. What is the reward? Is that like getting a medal a second time? Like you get the award again and again? You want to keep getting awards? No. What this is actually talking about is not a reward. It's actually talking about a rear ward. And we don't even spell rear like this anymore. We would say R-E-A-R and ward. And what is a ward? Isn't that a place in some hospitals? Yes, it is today. What it used to be was a place where there would be guards. Guards. So what this is actually it's guarding something on the back end. Putting soldiers at the back side of the back entrance or guarding at the back side of something, not just the front. So when the Bible talks about the rear reward, it's talking about putting a defensive guard at the back of something. But you wouldn't know that unless you studied it. You say, this is all fine information, Pastor, so basically I don't understand the Bible. No, you do better than you think. But I want to give you some advice. Do some digging. Don't be content just to kind of go through. I do a lot of this when I preach a message. I'm explaining a lot. I do a lot of this every week for you. But you should be able to do some of it yourself. Do some digging. Number one, use a Bible dictionary. I have the clicker. I'll click it. Use a Bible dictionary. I'll make some recommendations at the end of the lecture. A Bible dictionary has to be a Bible dictionary that consults what the Greek and Hebrew words mean, not an English dictionary. Okay? Not an English dictionary. A Greek and Hebrew Bible dictionary. That is very important. And you can get one. Consult other translations, which opens up another conversation that we'll get to someday here, hopefully in the next year or two. Consult other translations. There's not just one perfect English translation, and there's not just one perfect Spanish translation. I think we're going to understand that better in a place like the Queens, New York City, than some places in the world. There are a lot of places that have the idea that the King James Bible is the only legitimate translation, and that's not true. We're going to talk about that. There are reasons why, despite some of its difficulties in understanding, that it has merit. But it's not the only good translation. It has some strengths and it has some weaknesses that we've looked at even today. There are other translations, and let me just suggest to me, my preferred personal translation is the New King James Bible, and I'll explain later why that is, but it is easier to understand. Other good options, I would not rate them quite as high, but would be the ESV and the NASB. There is value to those as well. Once we start talking about the NIV, I start losing confidence. And sometime I will explain to you why that is. But here's the thing. When you're wrestling with words, what you're wrestling with is, what is God, what is he saying? What are these words? Gave them in Greek and Hebrew, what are they in English then? And there's no perfect way to get from one idea in one language to another. We understand that. And the Bible doesn't promise that for English or Spanish or Portuguese or anything. But we have the Bible in our language. And sometimes it's helpful. I do this myself. I'll look at a different translation. Maybe you've noticed that sometimes I'm looking at a verse and I'm preaching a message and I don't have time to explain how the King James says it. So I give you the New King James. Have you ever seen that? Sometimes I give my own translation. Have you ever noticed that? I do. Because I want you to understand what it's saying. And so it probably would be good to have a couple of different translations. And we're going to talk about that down the road. But before the King James Bible was ever translated, they had multiple translations before then, too. So that's important to do, and that will help you. Some translations get a certain verse across better than others. Consider the context. That is going to answer a lot of your questions. You're going to find, when you're looking at the word salvation and saved, this week in your homework, it's very easy to see in most cases, is this talking about physical salvation or salvation from sin or salvation from drowning? Because the context will actually tell you that in many cases. That's very, very important. Recommendations for resources for you. Mounce's complete expository dictionary of the Old and New Testament words. I think you can get this for around $20 in paper. That is a helpful resource. It gives you biblical word definitions and accounts for a lot of good research over the years that's been done. Some of you may have Vine's expository dictionary of Old and New Testament words. This is more of the most recent version of that. And it's, if you're going to get one fresh, I would recommend going with this one. Very helpful. Of course, today there's a lot of software options out there. I do recommend some Bible software, because what Bible software allows you to do, instead of having to go to this book and that book and that, you can just kind of scroll your mouse over it, and it'll tell you what is the Greek word and take you to the right definition without all the page turning. Logos is what I use. I've spent several $1,000s on my Logos library. You remember Pastor Sawyer's library? You walk into his office and there was nothing but books and a chair everywhere. You go into my office, I have like two rows of books in my closet and you can't even see them and I hardly look at them. Most of my resources are paid and on my computer, and there's a lot of them. It would probably fill the room if I put them all out, but they're electronic. Logos is the software I use. I highly recommend it. The basic version gives you it for free, but then you can add modules in. You can buy them. You can also have them available on your phone as well as at home. I don't recommend using the screen for your devotions, but then for more intense Bible study, I think it is helpful to do. When you use your screen for devotions, you end up checking your email and everything else too, and that's just not really great. Another option is Accordance Bible Study software, more designed for Mac users. I'm very brand loyal, so I like Logos, but Accordance would be good if you like a Mac. You can get Light for free. You can also get their Starter Edition, which includes mounts and a few other books that are helpful for basic understanding, for about $50 or something, and that's a good option for you. Also has mobile apps to go along with the desktop software. Olive Tree software is a third option. It is more limited, and I think some of the books you buy are more expensive. The benefit of it is pretty limited and focused, and beyond what most of you would want to do, you're not going to be spending probably thousands of dollars on your software library. It might be a good choice because it's more simple and focused and so forth. But you could look at these and ask me specific questions if you have any. I would love to interest some of you in getting resources like this so you are more tuned in to what the Greek and Hebrew words are saying, because you then begin to understand the Bible accurately. Here's your homework. Complete the Salvation Bible Study worksheet. I'm going to sit that up front, right on this pew right here. Grab one and take it home. Only 11 questions. Proverbs 37:8 says, you ready for this? Fret not thyself in any wise to do evil. Say that together. Fret not thyself in any wise to do evil. What does that mean? You have to stop and think about it really hard. And even then, you're probably wrong. So I want you to study this. Look at word meanings. Look at context. Maybe look at other translations. And try to come out with, in a week or two, when we have our next class, what is this actually saying? Because it is important to know. And then do a little research at the online software options that I gave you and be familiar with them.